Chapter 143. The beginning of a longer journey. It was yet early in the morning of the following day, when, as I was walking in my garden with my aunt, who took little other exercise now, being so much in attendance on my dear Dora, I was told that Mr. Peggotty desired to speak with me. He came into the garden to meet me halfway on my going towards the gate, and bared his head, as it was always his custom to do when he saw my aunt, for whom he had a high respect. I had been telling her all that had happened overnight. Without saying a word, she walked up with a cordial face, shook hands with him, and patted him on the arm. It was so expressively done that she had no need to say a word. Mr. Peggotty understood her quite as well as if she had said a thousand. "I'll go in now, Trot," apostrophe said my aunt, "and look after little Blossom, who will be getting up presently." Apostrophe, "not along of my being here, ma'am, I hope?" Apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty. "Unless my wits is gone a bod sneezing," by which Mr. Peggotty meant to say, "bird's nesting this morning, 'tis along of me as you're a going to quit us?" Apostrophe, "you have something to say, my good friend," apostrophe returned my aunt, "and will do better without me." Apostrophe, "by your leave, ma'am," apostrophe returned Mr. Peggotty, "I should take it kind, purvising you needn't mind my cliquettin', if you'd bide here." Apostrophe, "would you?" Apostrophe said my aunt, with short good nature. "Then I am sure I will." Apostrophe, so, she drew her arm through Mr. Peggotty's, and walked with him to a leafy little summer house there was at the bottom of the garden, where she sat down on a bench, and I beside her. There was a seat for Mr. Peggotty too, but he preferred to stand, leaning his hand on the small rustic table. As he stood, looking at his cap for a little while, before beginning to speak, I could not help observing what power and force of character his sinewy hand expressed, and what a good and trusty companion it was to his honest brow and iron gray hair. "I took my dear child away last night," apostrophe Mr. Peggotty began, as he raised his eyes to ours, "to my lodging, where I have a long time been expecting of her, and preparing for her. It was hours afore she knowed me right, and when she did, she kneeled down at my feet, and kinder said to me, as if it was her prayers, how it all come to be. You may believe me, when I heard her voice, as I had heard at home, so playful and see her humbled, as it might be in the dust our Savior wrote in with his blessed hand, I felt a wound go to my heart, in the midst of all its thankfulness." Apostrophe, he drew his sleeve across his face, without any pretense of concealing why, and then cleared his voice. "It warn't for long as I felt that, for she was found. I had only to think as she was found, and it was gone. I didn't know why I do so much as mention of it now, I'm sure. I didn't have it in my mind a minute ago, to say a word about myself, but it come up so natural, that I yielded to it afore I was here." Apostrophe, "you are a self-denying soul," apostrophe said my aunt, "and will have your reward." Apostrophe, Mr. Peggotty, with the shadows of the leaves playing athwart his face, made a surprised inclination of the head towards my aunt, as an acknowledgement of her good opinion, then took up the thread he had relinquished. "When my Emily took flight," apostrophe he said, in stern wrath for the moment, apostrophe from the house where she was made a prisoner by that fear-spotted snake as Master Davy, and his story's true, and may God confound him, she took flight in the night. It was a dark night, with a many stars a-shining. She was wild. She ran along the sea beach, believing the old boat was here, and calling out to us to turn away our faces, for she was a-coming by. She heard herself a-crying out, like as if it was another person, and cut herself on them sharp-pinted stones and rocks, and felt it no more than if she had been rock herself. Ever so fur she run, and there was fire afore her eyes, and roarings in her ears. Of a sudden or so she thought, you understand, the day broke, wet and windy, and she was lying low a heap of stone upon the shore, and a woman was a-speaking to her, saying, in the language of that country, what was it as had gone so much amiss? ... He saw everything he related. It passed before him, as he spoke, so vividly, that, in the intensity of his earnestness, he presented what he described to me, with greater distinctness than I can express. I can hardly believe, writing now long afterwards, but that I was actually present in these scenes. They are impressed upon me with such an astonishing air of fidelity. As Emily's eyes, which was heavy, see this woman better, ... Mr. Peggotty went on, she knowed as she was one of them as she had often talked to on the beach. Fur, though she had run, as I have said, ever so fur in the night, she had oftentimes wandered long ways, partly afoot, partly in boats and carriages, and knowed all that country, long the coast, miles and miles. She hadn't no children of her own, this woman, being a young wife, but she was a-looking to have one afore long. And may my prayers go up to heaven, that 'twill be a happiness to her, and a comfort, and a honor, all her life. May it love her, and be dutiful to her, in her old age, helpful of her at the last, a angel to her here, and hereafter. ... Amen. ... said my aunt. She had been somewhat timorous and down, said Mr. Peggotty, and had sat, at first, a little way off, at her spinning, or such work as it was, when Emily talked to the children. But Emily had took notice of her, and had gone, and spoke to her, and as the young woman was partial to the children herself, they had soon made friends. Surmuch, sir, that when Emily went that way, she always give Emily flowers. This was her as now asked, what it was that had gone so much amiss. Emily told her, and she took her home. She did indeed. She took her home, said Mr. Peggotty, covering his face. He was more affected by this act of kindness than I had ever seen him affected by anything since the night she went away. My aunt and I did not attempt to disturb him. It was a little cottage, you may suppose, he said, presently, but she found space for Emily in it. Her husband was away at sea, and she kept it secret, and prevailed upon such neighbors as she had, they was not many near, to keep it secret to. Emily was took bad with fever, and, what is very strange to me is, maybe 'tis not so strange to scholars, the language of that country went out of her head, and she could only speak her own, that no one understood. She recollects, as if she had dreamed it, that she lay there always a-talking her own tongue, always believing as the old boat was round the next pint in the bay, and begging and imploring of 'em to send fear, and tell how she was dying, and bring back a message of forgiveness, if it was on ye word. Amidst the whole time, she thought now, that 'em as I made mention on just now was lurking for her underneath the winder. Now that Amaz had brought her to this was in the room, and cried to the good young woman, not to give her up, and knowed, at the same time, that she couldn't understand, and dreaded that she must be took away. Likewise the fire was afore her eyes, and the roarings in her ears, and fear was no today, nor yesterday, nor yet tomorrow, but everything in her life as ever had been, or as ever could be, and everything as never had been, and as never could be, was a crowding on her all at once, and nothing clear nor welcome, and yet she sang and laughed about it. How long this lasted, I didn't know, but then fear come asleep, and in that sleep, from being a many times stronger than her own self, she fell into the weakness of the littlest child. Here he stopped, as if for relief from the terrors of his own description. After being silent for a few moments, he pursued his story. It was a pleasant afternoon when she awoke, and so quiet, that there weren't a sound, but the rippling of that blue sea without a tide, upon the shore. It was her belief, at first, that she was at home upon a Sunday morning. But the vine leaves as she see at the winder, and the hills beyond, warned home, and contradicted of her. Then, come in her friend, to watch alongside of her bed. And then she knowed as the old boat warned round that next pint in the bay no more, but was fur off, and knowed where she was, and why, and broke out a crying on that good young woman's bosom, where I hope her baby is a lying now, a cheering of her with its pretty eyes. ... He could not speak of this good friend of Emily's without a flow of tears. It was in vain to try. He broke down again, endeavoring to bless her. That done my Emily good, ... he resumed, after such emotion as I could not behold without sharing in, and as to my aunt, she wept with all her heart, that done Emily good, and she begun to mend. But, the language of that country was quite gone from her, and she was forced to make signs. So she went on, getting better from day to day, slow, but sure, and trying to learn the names of common things, names as she seemed never to have heard in all her life till one evening come, when she was a sitting at her window, looking at a little girl at play upon the beach. And of a sudden this child held out her hand, and said, "What would be an English fisherman's daughter, here's a shell." For you are to understand, that they used at first, to call her pretty lady, as the general way in that country is, and that she had taught them to call her fisherman's daughter instead. The child says of a sudden, "Fisherman's daughter, here's a shell." Then Emily understands her, and she answers, bursting out a crying, and it all comes back. When Emily got strong again, ... said Mr. Peggotty, after another short interval of silence, she cast about to leave that good young creature, and get to her own country. The husband was come home then, and the two together put her aboard a small trader bound to Leghorn, and from that to France. She had a little money, but it was less than little as they would take for all they done. I'm amist glad on it, though they was so poor. What they done, is laid up where neither moth or rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. Master Davy, it'll outlast all the treasure in the world. Emily got to France, and took service to wait on traveling ladies at a inn in the port. Fear come, one day, that snake. Let him never come nigh me. I didn't know what hurt I might do him. Soon as she see him, without him seeing her, all her fear and wildness returned upon her, and she fled afore the very breath he drawed. She come to England, and was set ashore at Dover. I didn't know, said Mr. Peggotty, for sure, when her art begun to fail her, but all the way to England she had thought to come to her dear home. Soon as she got to England she turned her face towards it. But, fear of not being forge of, fear of being pinted at, fear of some of us being dead along of her, fear of many things, turned her from it, keened her by force, upon the road. "Uncle, uncle," she says to me, "the fear of not being worthy to do what my torn and bleeding breast so longed to do, was the most frightening fear of all. I turned back, when my heart was full of prayers, that I might crawl to the old doorstep, in the night, kiss it, lay my wicked face upon it, and fear be found dead in the morning." "She come," ... said Mr. Peggotty, dropping his voice to an awe-stricken whisper, "to London. She as had never seen it in her life alone without a penny young so pretty come to London. Amidst the moment as she lighted here, all so desolate, she found, as she believed, a friend. A decent woman as spoke to her about the needlework as she had been brought up to do, about finding plenty of it for her, about a lodging for the night, and making secret inquiration concerning of me, and all at home, tomorrow. When my child, ... he said aloud, and with an energy of gratitude, that shook him from head to foot, stood upon the brink of more than I can say or think on Martha, true to her promise, saved her. ... I could not repress a cry of joy. "Master Davy! ... said he, gripping my hand in that strong hand of his, "it was you as first made mention of her to me. I thank ye, sir. She was earnest. She had knowed of her bitter knowledge where to watch, and what to do. She had done it. And the Lord was above all. She come, white and hurried, upon Emily in her sleep. She says to her, "Rise up from worse than death, and come with me." system belonging to the house would have stopped her, but they might as soon have stopped the sea. Stand away from me, she says. I am a ghost that calls her from beside her open grave. She told Emily she had seen me, and know that I loved her, and forgive her. She wrapped her, hasty, in her clothes. She took her, faint and trembling, on her arm. She heeded no more what they said, than if she had had no ears. She walked among them with my child, minding only her, and brought her safe out, in the dead of the night, from that black pit of ruin. She attended on Emily, apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, who had released my hand, and put his own hand on his heaving chest. She attended to my Emily, lying wearied out, and wandering betwixt whiles, till late next day. Then she went in search of me, then in search of you, Master Davy. She didn't tell Emily what she come out for, lest her art should fail, and she should think of hiding of herself. How the cruel lady knowed of her being here, I can't say. Whether him as I have spoke so much of, chanced to see him going here, or whether which is most like, to my thinking, he had heard it from the woman, I needn't greatly ask myself. My niece is found. All night long, apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, we have been together, Emily and me. Tis little, considering the time, as she has said, in words, through them broken-hearted tears, tis less as I have seen of her dear face, as growed into a woman's at my hearth. But, all night long, her arms has been about my neck, and her head is laid here, and we knows full well, as we can put our trust in one another, evermore. Apostrophe, he ceased to speak, and his hand upon the table rested there in perfect repose, with a resolution, in it that might have conquered lions. It was a gleam of light upon me, Trot, apostrophe said my aunt, drying her eyes, when I formed the resolution of being godmother to your sister Betsy Trotwood, who disappointed me. But, next to that, hardly anything would have given me greater pleasure than to be godmother to that good young creature's baby. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Peggotty nodded his understanding of my aunt's feelings, but could not trust himself with any verbal reference to the subject of her commendation. We all remained silent, and occupied with our own reflections, my aunt drying her eyes, and now sobbing convulsively, and now laughing and calling herself a fool, until I spoke. You have quite made up your mind, apostrophe said I to Mr. Peggotty, as to the future, good friend. I need scarcely ask you. Apostrophe, quite, Master Davy, apostrophe he returned, and told Emily. Fears mighty countries, fur from here. Our future life lays over the sea. Apostrophe, they will emigrate together, and, apostrophe said one. Yes. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, with a hopeful smile. No one can reproach my darling in Australia. We will begin a new life over here. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I asked him, if he yet proposed to himself any time for going away. I was down at the docks early this morning, sir, apostrophe he returned, to get information concerning of them ships. In about 6 weeks or 2 months from now, there'll be one sailing. I see her this morning went aboard, and we shall take our passage in her. Apostrophe, quite alone? Apostrophe I asked. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.